I'm going to send you in there to get the victim. I'm going to expect you to come back with one or two things, either the victim or injuries. Don't come back and tell me you couldn't get to them and no blisters or nothing to show me. That's bullshit, right? This is a dangerous job.
Firehouse Vigilance presents The Weekly Scrap, a podcast dedicated to the never-ending fight against complacency.
Corley Moore, Firehouse Vigilance. It is Weekly Scrap number 240. Mike Pascal is a battalion chief with the Oklahoma City Fire Department. Currently, he is assigned to Battalion 603 on the C shift, located on the southeast side of Oklahoma City. During his 35-year career, he has risen through the ranks, served as the Hazardous Materials Task Force leader, as a special rescue lieutenant on Rescue 8. He spent a large part of his early career on Squad 1. He joined the fire service at OCFD in 1989. He responded to the Murrah bombing, the May 3rd tornado of 1999. He has the college degrees. He has the certifications. More importantly, he is sought after to teach, and he is passionate about sharing all of his knowledge. He has forgotten more than I know about tactics and strategy when it comes to emergency response, and it is my absolute pleasure to have him on as the guest for Scrap number 240. Number 240, welcome my brother, Mike Pascal.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, the one thing, I'm pretty sure I'm saying your last name right, but I meant to ask you before we went live. It is Pascal, right?
Yes, sir. That's correct. Like okay. The old guy.
All right, just making sure, because I was like, I'm going to make sure, and I meant to ask before I said it, but then I got to it, and I was like, I forgot to ask. Is there anything I missed in the intro? Anything you would like to add?
No, I think you did real well. That's made me sound really well.
Awesome. Audience, please get your questions primed and ready for Mike and myself. Sam is here. He is monitoring chats. He is looking for your questions, and if you have them, send them. We will get to them. We're going to have some fun. One second. I'm going to fix Instagram on this thing. Give me one second. There we go. There we go. Okay. Just a little bit of silence for you to all enjoy as you contemplate what is going on. Everybody on Instagram, welcome to the party. We are trying to involve you, so please send your questions on Instagram and then LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook. We're still trying to figure out where we're going to land, but right now we're doing it all. So let's talk. Yes. Good evening, everyone watching on shift from Richmond Hill, Georgia. That comes from Alan Glogowski. Cody Brooks said, let's go. Just got home and tuned in. Gary Arb 52001 said, let's go. Exclamation point. Rob Fisher checking in from Vegas said, let's go. There's a lot of LFGs going on here. A lot of LFGs. Rob Fisher said, Sam, you guys are sounding and looking good on YouTube. So there we go. We got a quality check. So please, please, please get your questions in. Let me know on Instagram what it sounds like, what it looks like. And so here we go. Now we'll do the sponsors and then we'll get to scrapping. So here we go. The original, the OG, the sponsor of the scrap, Keyhose. Check them out online at keyhose.com and follow them on Facebook. Affordable Drill Towers, on a mission to bring you cost-effective and versatile training props. With more than 60 drill towers installed since their inception, the Affordable Drill Tower comes in several configurations and comes standard with a standpipe system. Choose from one or two sets of stairs, place it against your Connex boxes for multi-story access or freestanding on a slab. All models are NFPA 1402 compliant and gain you ISO credit. The only thing that you can't do on an affordable drill tower is your live fire training. Pump and roll using the affordable standpipe prop. Roll your affordable standpipe prop into the classroom for standpipe theory. Then roll it into the parking lot and pump realistic flows and pressures. It comes with up to 7 standpipe valves that can be upgraded to PRVs. The affordable bailout prop allows you to practice window bailouts, and ladder high point rescues. It's only 5 feet wide and 7 feet long. The affordable bailout prop can roll under any 12-foot overhead door, so you can train on the apparatus bay floor or in the parking lot. Call Steve, 844-55-TOWER, or drop an email to info@affordabledrilltowers.com. And finally, FireStationFurniture.com provides a complete line of quality furniture for your firehouse. Firefighter owned and operated, they understand the strain firefighters put on furniture and offer furniture that's built to last. Visit www.firestationfurniture.com for more information. And that officially puts the sponsors on the books, and we are ready to scrap. So, Chief, I am excited about the topics you sent, because every time we do a scrap, I always send out the topics, and they always send them back. And every time I look at them and stuff like that, and sometimes I get really excited. And tonight is one of those ones. I'll just lead off with one of the ones that really caught my attention. And I'll qualify this question a little bit as I get to you. And it's being a student of the fire service. It's one of the topics you wanted to talk about. And I love that topic, first of all. But I wanted to say right out the gate, I go to a lot of classes in the Oklahoma City metro area, in Oklahoma. I go to a lot of classes here. I also bring classes and have my guys go to them, right? Yeah. And one of the things I love to see is almost without fail, every time there is a tactics or a strategy class of any sort in the area, I show up there and you are there. You are in the front. You are taking notes. You are a student of the game. And I love this, what you said when you talked about this. You said, can you quote Tommy Boy, but you can't find FSRI website? So go ahead and talk to me.
Yeah, that was just the first website that I came up with. And I think it's because at the fire station the other day, we were watching a lot of their videos. And then when I teach new officer class, promotion classes, Oklahoma City, I'll come in and do some of the strategy and tactics and get them introduced to incident command. And we had an incident not too long ago where we dropped a couple of guys through a roof. So we were looking at ventilation videos. We were discussing vertical ventilation and how necessary is it, and kind of revisiting hazard risk and things like that. So I had just spent the day before, you know, looking at those videos again. But the things I like about them is there's tons of them on there. When you get to that FSRI website and the links to UL and NIST training, you get to see those engineers that actually did those tests.
Right.
And then they've got some YouTube videos where they're talking about them, because if you've ever tried to read one of those test results, it's right up there with an OSHA standard, you know, as far as putting you to sleep and confusing. So you really need those guys to explain it to you. But yeah, I have newer officers and newer firefighters always ask me, you know, what should I look at? What should I read? And I said, well, you know, start here with these little videos. They're easy to understand. Well, I've watched those. Well, watch them again.
Right. You know,
you've watched Happy Gilmore 55 times, you know, but you've watched that once. Yeah. Happy Gilmore doesn't do anything for you as far as paying the bills and keeping you alive, you know.
No, it's solid.
And it helps keep your eyes open. You know, it's like anything else. You do, man. It's a perishable skill, and you're gonna miss things. So I tell new officers, you know, you can quit worrying so much, because when you arrive on the fire ground, you are gonna miss stuff. The way we compensate for most of that is overwhelming force. You know, one of the things I tell them is if the United States Marines wanted to take over an island, and they looked, and that island had 100 fighters on it. The Marines don't send 100 fighters. They send 100,000, and they put them on there just as fast as they can. So that's how we make up for a lot of the things that you will miss on the fire ground.
Right on, right on.
And then I kind of fall back with on the fact that how are you going to know, right, that you missed something if you're not really even sure what you're looking for? You know, all of our, that's where I got to next with them was when I was a new driver, a new officer, I kept thinking, man, you know, what I really need, what do they need? And then I thought, well, this is simple. I've been through there. What did I need? Well, it occurred to me that I didn't have any time standing in the street watching my incident plan play out. I didn't have any experience trying to figure out how well it was working for the guys inside the structure fire. So I thought, well, what are clues that I've learned over the years that indicate how well it's going for your firefighters inside that structure? Well, they're trying to carry out your incident action plan.
Right.
You know, and then from there, I came up with different clues. And to be honest, not all of those clues are strictly mine. I mean, most of the things that I came up with to tell them are through hundreds of articles and, you know, line of duty death reports and close calls and things like that. You know, just if these things start to pile up, and if I give you a 100 examples, maybe you can remember five of them. And if you hear those five things, get ready. Some shit's about to go bad.
Oh, I love it. I love that. Now we're going to touch on it. We're going to touch on the stack and the clues and cues. I really do want to touch on it, but I also want to involve the audience, and I got stuff coming at you that I want you to hear. Sure. First off, I'm going to find my notes because I just buried them. Not on purpose, but I managed to do it. Here we go. Jay Obbs wants to know, is this the first band shirt on the scrap? I don't think it is. I think there's been some AC/DC, but it's definitely very prominent. So maybe it might be. There you go. So there's that answer.
Music. I'm a very big entertainment guy, and mostly fringe type entertainment. Guys that have worked with me over the years have. One of the things they always ask the guys that are working with me now is, you still watch all those stupid movies? And they'll go, well, yeah, but, you know, now that I'm a chief, I don't have as much time to go out there and control their television. So they kind of skate on some of it.
Right on. Right on. Is there an example of the stupid movies?
Oh, well, you know, we talked about Tommy Boy and Happy Gilmore, which those to me are mainstream, man.
Right, right.
I watch a lot of Tubi, you know, B campy horror movies, Evil Dead type stuff.
Right on, right on.
Just junk like
Bruce that. Campbell, like
yeah. Oh yeah, no,
Bruce. All right. Bill, Sharp Smart, Shop S Smart. All right.
A Briggs Drive-In Theater comes on. I guess it's Scream or something.
Okay. No, and the funny part is some of these to me seem like, yeah, that was just yesterday, but we are becoming the old guys, and young people look at us and go, what are they talking about?
Oh, yeah, they don't know. They don't have any idea. My granddaughter came in with a Nirvana shirt on. I said, hey, cool shirt. You know who they are? And she said, no.
Right.
That ought to be a crime.
Right. Okay. This is fair. Okay. Coming at you, a serious question here. This comes from Rob Fisher. Chief, I can only imagine how difficult the response was to the AP Murrah Federal Building. Can you share what changes have or have not occurred as a result of the incident?
Well, you know, whenever the Murrah Building was bombed in 1995, which we're coming up on, what, like the, I don't know, the 30th anniversary?
Yeah.
I think it's 30-something.
Yeah.
When it was bombed, I was a firefighter at once, and I made driver shortly after that, but... you know, so as far as the command aspect and everything goes and what has changed on the fire department, right after that is whenever we revamped primarily a lot of our rescue program. You know, we had the squads, each district, Oklahoma City has six districts, and each district had one rescue squad. And the ladders had some extrication equipment, but not a whole lot. So after that, we kind of took the squads out of service and made all of the ladders, all of the trucks, rescue ladders, and equipped them kind of like a light USAR rescue package. And then we went to medium and heavy rescues, you know, at eights, which now has moved to sixes. But that was one of the biggest ones that immediately affected me, you know. And I'll tell you honestly, Corley, man, I never was, you know, I talk about being a student of the fire service, but I was always just loving being on the job, man. I wasn't studying it a whole lot. Plus, you got to remember, when I came on in 89, I made captain in the 90s, man. There wasn't even internet.
Right, I mean, right.
Fire engineering, firehouse, or buying books, you weren't seeing anything.
Right. So did your love of studying it come later in your career?
I tell you, the rescue stuff I liked, which in some of the stuff that I sent you before the show, I said, well, you know, I'm the laziest guy I know, man. I'll coast to a stop. No kidding. And early on, I learned that the only way I got better was if I put myself under pressure. And it makes me real uncomfortable. You know, like anybody else, I don't like looking like I don't know what's going on. So I'll study better. So I got in the rescue, and one day my chief comes in and he goes, well, Lieutenant, he goes, you're next on the captain's list. He said, they're going to promote you and the other driver that was with me, a guy named Tommy Curry. Awesome dude. And they said, you're first. So his name was Tony Tabor. He was 601B. He said, so you got two choices, man. You want to go to sixes on the red shift, which at the time sixes was there by all the hospitals. It wasn't in Britain. Yeah, it's just the other side of the highway, but still. But it was the red shift. I didn't want to go to the red shift. But I certainly didn't want to work by the hospital. But your choice is fives on the blue there at 23rd and Broadway. And it's on the blue shift. And I said, well, you know, whatever keeps me out of sixes and off the red shift, man, that's the one. He said, well, you have to become a hazmat tech. Is that okay? Again, whatever keeps me out of sixes and off. And, dude, that was the best career move I ever made, because when I got there and all of the junior officers were going to ride out as chief, and until then, that was never even on my radar. I wish I could say I had grand plans. I just wanted to get on the job.
Right, right.
I bet I could do that driver job. And then one day I thought, I bet I could do the captain job. And when I sat down as a captain in the 90s, I thought, oh, man, this is it. I've arrived. And after so many years of that, going to fives, I enjoyed all the hazmat stuff and the hazmat and the chemistry and then the hazard risk that goes with hazardous materials response really started clicking with me.
Right on.
And that's when I started becoming more of a student of the fire service. And then, again, like I said, man, Bobby Holton, you know, put together fire engineering, and he was the first place on the internet that you could actually go and get reputable information. And of course, you got to be careful on the internet, man. There's no quality control. Anybody?
Without a doubt.
And
look, case in point.
If you knew me 30 years ago, you'd go, yeah, I can't believe that guy's on there. Yeah.
There are people that roll their eyes every time I go live. I promise you.
But again, you know, I was just loving coming to work, you know, and I still do. I get my ups and downs, but the peaks and valleys get closer together, you know.
Nice. I love that.
And then I learned that if I surround myself with newer members, then I remember what it was like when I was where they are.
Right on.
You know, so. They come to work. They can't wait to get there. And I always tell them, man, the hardest part of my day is from my bed to the fire station door. After that, it's all downhill. I have people. I was complaining about all my email, and Chief Lindsay, who is 603B, he's the senior guy on the entire Oklahoma City Fire Department. The dude had his 40th anniversary last week.
Nice.
And he said, well, what's wrong with the emails? I said, well, hell, there's so many of them, picks all damn day, blah, blah. He goes, aren't most of them forward, delete, delete, forward, delete, forward? I said, yeah, I guess they are. It's a good point, Chief.
Solid. Hey, you can always learn. You can always learn. That's what I'm saying. Student of the game.
Then, like you said, all the new stuff starts coming out. And all the research from the engineers and the fire tests. And it was kind of interesting at first, but then what happened, Corley, is I started thinking, well, that explains what I've seen, because what I've seen wasn't jiving.
Right.
Everybody had been telling me.
Right.
And hell, maybe I'm misinterpreting it. I don't know. Turns out I wasn't.
Right. No, it didn't jive because it didn't work. Cody Brooks wants to know, this is a question coming at you because the audience drives a lot of it. So I'm going to throw a lot of questions at you, but there are some stuff I want to get to. But Cody Brooks wants to know, what is a tactic that is still in use that needs to be removed or revamped with the progression in the fire service? So over your career, what do you think? I like your question.
You know, I don't know. The first thing that comes to mind is how we train our firefighters. And in Oklahoma City, I feel like we're a real progressive department. You know, I didn't realize that until I got into hazmat and we went through all the suspicious substance and white powders and drug labs and on and on and on. And I got to travel around the country as a hazmat officer in a major city, you know. And that's when I learned. I tell you that to tell you this. Where I'm going with this, and my brother and I always talked about it a lot. My brother's retired now. But he said, have you ever noticed when we train, everything we train is under a stopwatch. He said, it's all as fast as we can train. And I know a lot of people are still doing that. And it seems to me like one of the keys, I picked this up in hazmat as well, is kind of slowing down a little bit. Now, a lot of that's going to depend on your position on the fire ground. You know, as an engine company officer, you need to aggressively execute, your objectives given to you by command.
Right.
But as a commander, when I arrive, one of the last things I need to do is be real fast. So I don't know that it would relate to a tactic, but I think it would relate to how we prepare ourselves and our firefighters and so far as making those tactics happen. You know, take a little, just a few more seconds. One of my good friends used to say, take a second to make a second, you know, or something like that.
Right, right.
But as far as tactics go, probably using nozzles and things like that, look a little more into how those tools are applied in different situations. But our tactics, I mean, put water on the fire as fast as you can. Mm. I mean, pretty simple. You're that comedian. There's fire over here. I want you to spray water on it until there's no more fire. And then there'll be fire over here. I want you to take the same tactic. You know,
right.
It's just how we're doing it. That's a little bit different.
No, I love it. I absolutely love it. Great question. Thank you, Cody, for that. Another one coming at you from Rob Fisher. One of my favorite people on the planet, by the way. But Rob Fisher saying, Chief, how has, and this goes into one of the topics that we have on the thing, because, and I'll tie this into Rob's question, but it's one of the topics we want. So let me bring up my notes here and say, the officer development program. I want to hear you talk about it because it was designed to initially stop the, all of the experience of your department just retiring and leaving, right? To make up for, because everybody's going through the turnover, everybody. And you guys said, we're going to do this officer development program to alleviate that issue. And you were involved in that. And then Rob Fisher's question absolutely ties into it. So go ahead and talk to us about that program.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Again, in the late, I don't know, 80s, early 90s, we were hiring rookie classes that consisted of 60 plus members, you know, twice a year. So all of those folks became eligible for retirement at the same time.
Right.
And service across the country, we were realizing the same issue. You would come to work one day, I'd be 20 or 30 senior members short. In fact, now I think, and I can't remember the exact numbers, I'm going to use over 50% of Oklahoma City firefighters have, you know, less than 5 years on. Man, I have a hard time finding guys that can relief drive.
Yes.
So Chief Walker and Chief Kelly and our other command staff being very proactive, started thinking, well, how do we prepare our people if we want them to perform certain ways on the fire ground and on the emergency scene? Are we training them right? And what are we going to do about all that experience walking out the door? So me and a really good friend of mine, we came up through the fire department, a guy named Chris Black. Chris was kind of tasked with coming up with some of the strategy and tactics part. So I just had a bunch of stuff, because I had worked out at Eastern Oklahoma County and I've been in hazmat for industry and rescue training for industry. So I just had a ton of crap. So I took it to Chris and I said, look, man, I got all these videos and articles and stuff. So we waded through there, and Chief Walker directed us to come up with a way to prepare our officers. So each one of our promotional academies, like Sergeant, which is entry level driver,
right,
start with basically an introduction to the command, the first, I guess, if you will, the first 30 minutes on scene. And then whenever they bump up to lieutenant, we get them up a little higher in the incident command, readdressing some of the stuff that the more senior officers have learned. And another goal for that training or preparation program was also to get people talking at the kitchen table, right?
Right.
We didn't want them just sitting there eating tacos, watching Happy Gilmore, and going, so what do you do when you arrive on scene and you're confronted with this?
Right.
And if nothing else, man, at least you what won't work. You know, I don't know what will work, but I can damn sure tell you what's not going to work.
Right.
You know?
What we did this time did not happen. Did not.
So that's kind of where it came from. And then as we move up, you know, to Captain Major, it's the same concept. And then you've had some of our other training guys on there that are really good trainers, Dane Yaw and Justin Lorenzen and some of those guys. And they were really good at developing the mental aspect of how humans learn and how to train them as far as recognition prime decision making. And then we brought in some other chiefs, Dominic Brown, and a couple of other chiefs that would help our newer officers deal with personnel problems, you know?
Right.
Asked for strategy and tactics, man, you would show up, you'd walk in there, they'd give you a problem, you'd start trying to command the problem and circling the drain and choking and drowning. And then when it was over, the chief that was running the scenario would just tell you all the shit you did wrong. And they would never tell you how to fix anything, you know? So I said, well, great. If we're going to do this, can we pick particular chiefs and particular instructors, people that understand how to teach, you know, other students? And Chief Walker said, yeah, whatever you need. So, you know, I wound up with a couple of chiefs in there that were real good. And when the candidate would start to stumble, they would stop them. Go, wait a minute, hold on. What do you want to do? And the candidate would tell them. And then the chief would go, all right, that sounds good. How was that going to sound on the radio? Because I know for me, a lot of it was I knew what I wanted to do and what needed to be done. I just didn't know how to put it out over the radio.
Okay. You
know, I talk on the radio.
Right.
Talk to my guys, you know?
Right.
And a lot of that really helped. And it got the members that were coming to those strategy and tactics classes and things to relax a little bit and ask questions and be a little more participative rather than just waiting for the day to end so they could go back to the fire station.
I love it, man. I love it. Okay. More questions coming. Are you ready for them?
Sure.
All right. Mark Alone's coming at you from the East Coast. As a new BC, most of the development material out there for operational command is NIMS and command sheet oriented. While I see a lot of value in those tools, can you offer your philosophy and experience on whether they become distractions and how to keep up with the incident while keeping up with everything expected of the IC in the car?
Yeah, and I agree 100%, man. All the ICS classes I went to were NIMS classes, which is the National Incident Management System, which is, dude, they're telling me in those classes how you're supposed to divert government directed funds. I can't even buy toilet paper from a fire station. You want me to learn why?
Right.
And then the ICS classes. Sorry, I dropped something in the floor. Dropped my nicotine gum.
Right on.
As old firefighters, you know, we always smoke. And I had to carry cigarettes for, you know, my officers when I was a new guy. So I started chewing gum. People always said, does that work? It works real well. I haven't smoked in years, but I chew about $100 worth of gum a month. But I had the same thing, man. I'd go to the ICS classes, and at the end of the ICS class, I would walk out of there more confused than anything else. So what I learned was, how does the incident develop in real life? Chief Kelly used to tell us when he was my battalion chief, you know, our fire chief, he would say, look, man, just command the incident. Look at the incident. What does it need? Make that happen. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, well, all an incident commander really needs to do on scene is put people in the right spot with the right stuff to fix whatever the hell's going on.
Right on.
Whenever you look at those IMS classes or ICS classes, especially at our level standing in the street, they're presented in a government, for lack of a better term, order. You know, it starts out with, you know, one single companies, and then it goes to branches and divisions, and then it goes up to, you know, well, that's not how shit develops. So what I did over the years was I wound up learning how to put my resources together and group them under somebody else. Remember my email, /delete? It's pretty much the same thing on the fire ground. In other words, I haven't put out a fire in almost 10 years. And the worst chief in the world can put fires out. You don't do it. It's the company officers.
Right on.
Effective. You tell them where you want them to do it, what you want them to do, and then they'll ask you for resources, man. And you just got to find it for them. Once you get that down, you can start to get a little bit ahead of the power curve. I think it's Kurt Isaacson, maybe, that says that. Let's see. Calming the chaos.
Yeah, Castro's, yeah.
There you go. Yeah. He came to the city and did a lot of stuff and started putting...
That's one of the local conferences I saw this chief at. So go ahead.
Oh, yeah. He's awesome as far as making things easy to understand. And what I started learning was if I can delegate those responsibilities, right? Most of the time you show up and we do everything with groups because everything I do is a structure fire, right? You got fire attack, you got search, you got rescue, you got whatever. And I learned that if I have maybe a garden apartment where I have people at windows on the exterior and people on the interior on the courtyard and apartments that need to be searched, how to use groups and divisions to get that done, to get that off your back.
Right.
But they need something. You just reinforce them. Just throw them more shit, you know? That kind of answers his question, but that's what I started learning was, how does the incident develop in real life? What does a group, what does a division do? If I have victims at windows on the alpha side, that can be alpha division, that can be a rescue group, whatever. Just tell those officers what you want them to do, who they're reporting to, where they're going to do it, and then, man, let them run, you know?
I love it, brother. I love it. And people in the chat are loving it too. Mark Alone, I think one of the original question answers says, yes, time stamp. He said, hell yes. Thank you, Chief. Great advice. So there you go. And when, people are saying it. Yes. Thanks.
In fact, I rely on my company officers sometimes too much. You know, you'll be fire attacked. I expect them to know where, with what, how, and then ask me if they can't do it, and I send them other people.
Right on.
9,900 fires, that works like a charm. It's that one fire, right, that you've got to be a good chief, get the right people in the right place, that one fire a year. And what happens, man, is you might not make that one fire in a year. And if you do, you might get lucky and not realize it. You know, did I get lucky or am I good? Well, it's probably a little bit of both, you know. So you'll go through 99 out of 100 fires and nothing ever goes wrong, man. And you get to thinking you got this shit down. It's that one fire that you need those good officers to request the resources. And you need to be thinking ahead of, again, we'll go with Castro's term, the power curve.
Right.
You know, in my mind as a chief, even as a company officer, especially a first on scene officer, you're going to look at what's going on. You get on scene, you give your on-scene report. Here I am. Basically, what happened? Somebody called and said, hey, man, I think my house is on fire. And dispatch, all right, well, hell, we'll send somebody out to look at it. Company drives out there. Officer goes, yeah, I'm out here on scene. Sure enough, there's some bitch on fire.
Right.
You know, and he asks for stuff. And then he runs around and does a 360. Well, when he's doing his 360, he needs to be looking at fire and smoke and structure and for people. He's doing basically a hazard assessment. And when he's completed with that 360, he should have come up with an incident action plan, right?
Right.
Hazards, what I want to do, where I want to do it, how I want it to look. The key to that is you need to be able to visualize that in your head, and you need to be able to communicate it, because you're going to need to know what it's going to look like if it's successful. And you need to know what it's going to look like if it's not, right? That way you've identified those trigger points where columns show when it's not successful starts to show up. You already know what that should look like. So act on it. That's going to save you a lot of time, man. You know, if you can get that stuff in place. So you call the plumber and you go, hey, I think my sink's leaking. Plumber drives out there. He walks in your house. He looks under the sink. He goes, yep, sure enough. Your sink's leaking. Let me go get some stuff. And he goes out to his truck and he gets some shit and he comes in. He works on it. The emergency's over once we get there. What would you do if your plumber kicked the door open, run in there, kicked open your bathroom door and went, holy shit, your sink's on fire. And then ran out and ran about 14 circles around the plumbing truck. You'd go, yeah, man, you could take your shit and go home. I'm going to hire somebody else. You know?
I love it.
You're supposed to be professional. At least fucking act like it.
Right on. Right on, man. I love it. I do. Chat says, J-Ob says, I love it. This one I knew was coming. Alan Glogowski wants to know, you mentioned the rank of major. What is their responsibility and where do they fall in the command line? Because we have majors here and more because we're close to Oklahoma City. As I travel and teach, I realize the rest of the country doesn't use major in the fire service, but you can touch on it.
The way Oklahoma City's rank structure is set up, and depends on who you ask as to why, it seems like I remember him saying, well, basically it gives you more steps before you have to make a promotion in a competitive exam. So it allows more pay step increases. It's also tied to career development and education incentive. But the way it works, you're hired and you're a recruit. Then you become a firefighter if you successfully pass the recruit year. Then if you have a driver's license, you complete a couple of training books that we have you do with certain time on the job, you become a corporal. Then at 5 years time on the job and as a corporal, you're eligible to take a competitive exam to go to sergeant. That's entry level driver. So you got sergeant and lieutenant. Then after you're a lieutenant for a while, you're eligible to, and meet requirements, you're eligible to take a competitive exam for captain. Captain is entry-level company officer. Major is just an extension of that.
Right.
So after you're a captain for a couple of years, you meet some of the education requirements, you're automatically a major. And then you have to have certain time and requirements to be eligible for the competitive exam for major to chief. But basically, a major is a glorified captain, for lack of a better term. That's kind of derogatory, but they're company officers.
Right. Right on.
They would run an engine ladder company. They'll run a fire station, things like that.
Looking for the next question coming at you. Josh Everett wants to know, I like this question, Josh. Thank you. Chief, so did you eliminate IFSTA from being your primary fire officer training and give them real life experience? Because I know IFSTA lives there in your area. So I just, yeah, that's his wording, not mine.
The answer to that question is pretty much, yeah. The textbooks, whenever you're looking at any kind of source, it's important that there's a consortium or a crew of people, a group that comes up with the best strategy and tactics. All agrees on how it's going to get done and then publishes that. Like I said before, there's no quality control. I can write Mike's fire attack book and put it out there if I can publish it. But to answer his question in a simple one-word answer, pretty much, yeah. We use the IFSTA textbooks and things like that, a few other textbooks insofar as, you know, Firefighter 1 requirements go, because, again, that's going to fall under some OSHA requirements and safety training.
Sure.
But so far as the promotional academies, pretty much, yeah. I mean, we don't use IFSTA PowerPoints or anything like that. It's basically tailored to how Oklahoma City Fire operates on the fire ground.
And you guys developed it internally.
Yes. Yeah. And it didn't like, man, it didn't like we sat down and wrote this whole curriculum. Every time we have any class, like we've got crew development going on now, which is we'll take our crews down and we'll focus on, you know, search, for example, is one of the deals we're doing now. So every company on every shift in every district will go down and they'll focus on search. And the people that do the search and deliver the class are always the same people over and over and over. That way you don't get somebody else's take on it. Everybody on the fire department has the same foundation. Yes. And that's where those instructors will present some of the new, you know, strategies and tactics. And we'll even present, you know, what our command staff or suppression chief wants from us insofar as operations on the fire ground, things like that. Yeah.
I love it. Okay. I got a question coming in at you from my watch. It comes from J-Lo, Justin Lorenzen. You may know him. He said, ask him what this expectations are of his district for a known trapped victim.
I expect injuries. If we get there and you know there's a victim, right? There's always potential victims. Everywhere we go, there's a potential victim. I don't care what they say. Well, the guy reports that nobody's in there. Well, yeah, when I show up, people tell me they feel fine too, and we still take their pulse, and we still ask them questions. So when I show up, I also learn one of the first questions is not, is anybody in there? Did you live here?
Nice.
You get all kinds, and they want to tell you a story, turn around and walk the fuck off and ask somebody else. Try to stick with yes and no questions. But anyway, when we get there and one of us has seen the victim or somebody's standing there and they're telling you that they saw somebody at a window, they saw somebody on a balcony, whatever, and they're believable, man. They got smoke. They got singed hair. They're coughing. And I'm going to send you in there to get the victim. I'm going to expect you to come back with one or two things, either the victim or injuries. Don't come back and tell me you couldn't get to them and no blisters or nothing to show me. That's bullshit, right? This is a dangerous job. Is the scene safe? No, it's not safe. That's for EMS. Our scene's not safe. Dude, I hate that. Right? I'm 58 years old and I'm saying, dude. The first week of rookie school, when they issue flame-resistant clothing and your own air supply to wear on your fucking back, you should have realized this is going to be a dangerous job, man. If you're not willing to accept that danger, then that's fine, but get a different job. And there's other places in the fire department you can go to work, too. You know, shoot for those. I don't know. But yeah, if I send you in for a known victim, I either expect the victim or I expect injuries or I expect both, right? I don't know how else to put it. Now, if I'm sending you in there to get them and there's heavy fire and the building's becoming unstable and things like that, it's not going to be a no-go right out of the box. It's going to be, all right, well, I'm going to reinforce your assignment. I'm going to send you another ladder. I'm going to send you two engines. I'm going to bring you hose lines. I'm going to get extra ambulances because that victim is now what? First priority number one. I rescue that person and I burn that whole apartment complex down, people will pat you on the back and tell you what a hero you are, right? But again, you know, luckily I'm in a large department. I can do both of those things at once, and I will, you know. So I expect those guys to do it. I expect them to get in there. I expect them to take an ass kicking. I expect them to kick ass. That's just it, man. I don't know what else to tell.
I love it. I didn't want to interrupt. I did not want to interrupt. That was one of the greatest sound bites ever, and I love it. I absolutely love it. And you have to go back, Chief, and listen to the response. I can't even read them all. I cannot even read them all.
I get so frustrated when fire breaks through the roof deck and we go defensive. Why? It's going to fall. What's going to fucking fall on me? It's burnt away. I can see stars from in there, man. There's nothing to fall on me. So I tell you this. Be a student of the fire service. Learn to read smoke. Learn to read fire. Learn building construction. Learn how to operate in areas that are becoming unstable, right? Learn that incident timeline. I said it earlier, I was a big entertainment guy. So for me, whenever I arrive on scene and I look at something and I come up with plan A, we should already have a pretty good idea of plan B, right? So when I put plan A into operation, it's based on what I believe that incident timeline is going to look like, which in my mind is a mental movie. This is what's going to happen if we don't do anything. Here are points in that movie where I can make a positive impact at different times based on the resources that I have, right? And it's a lot harder done than it is said, because it may be putting, a blitz fire in an area of the building.
Right, right.
Well, I'm going to have to get far enough ahead of that fire that I can do all that. One way to save time on that, to get a little proactive, because, man, let's face it, what we're always trying to do is get control. That means proactive, right, instead of responding. I need to get people in the right spot with the right water, with the right equipment, ready to kick the door, get in there, set that shit up, and get the fuck back out, right?
Yes.
I don't need to give them, okay, you're going to set up a blitz fire on the Delta side exposure. Go get your blitz fire, and they're moseying over, you know. Well, some bitch, man, now it's on Delta 2 exposure. Well, yeah, you screwed that up. You know, and like anybody else, man, I learned it the hard way.
The hard way.
You know, I burned up the Delta exposure and said, oh, shit, you know, now might be the time to do something different.
I love you, J-Lo. I'm telling you right now, you just peeled the can. You peeled the lid off that. That was awesome. I really do mean that from the bottom of my heart.
J-Lo, he's a funny dude.
He is a great dude. I love him. I'm looking for a question here. I like this one. This comes from Stephen McCaffrey, also known as Bull. Question. It seems like learning in the fire service has been greatly amplified with the amount of testing and online learning, like the weekly scrap. These young firefighters are doing things so much better than I did when I was in their shoes. How do you leverage these young studs on the fire ground to maximize our efficiency?
Well, the first thing that I learned about the newer firefighters that are really, you know, into the job and really kind of get it is, again, I like to have them around me. It helps me remember.
Right on.
But I think a lot of it goes back to the experience sharing thing, you know, not just talking to them around the table. One of my best friends is one of my drivers there at Sevens. He drives the engine. Name's Mike Pierce. He's like a 26, 27 year driver. And we're sitting around one day as an example. And we're talking about rescuing victims from a frozen pond. And there's all this, well, I think this would happen and that should happen. And they say, you can try this and you can do that. And I said, well, there's one dude sitting here at the table who's literally done it in real life. And everybody's looking at Mike. Mike's done it. You know, he's rescued a kid out of a frozen pond. He's taken a woman out of a window of a burning building onto a ground ladder. You know, he's done that shit. So, Mike, tell us, what happened? How did it work? What would have worked? What wouldn't have worked? right? So he shares that with the younger guys. Well, now the younger guys, they're a lot better at computers and things like, man, we didn't even have computers when I came on, right? We didn't have cell phones. So the younger guys will talk about things that they've read, things that they've heard. And then we'll go out there, we'll debate that a little bit at the table, and then we'll go out there and practice it. We'll try it. You know, so you can debate all you want, man. And like I said, I'm the laziest dude on the planet, but you can debate all you want, and you can think you know what's going to happen, and everybody thinks their plan is going to be successful. Well, there's only one way to find out. Let's go there and try it, see how it works, right? I mean, that's how I usually use them. I use them to keep my my attitude up, my enthusiasm up. They ask questions, which forces me to research stuff, think about things, talk to other senior members, other than just sitting back there watching SpongeBob on TV, you know, which I've been known to do. I'll do that all day long if I can get away with it. You know, SpongeBob is very stress relieving.
Relieving.
A little passive. Thing I use them for is a horrible word. Well, that and the fact that I'm pushing 60, I could do the company officer part, but it'd probably kill me.
Sure.
I can drag the line to the door and I can get the door open, but somebody else may have to spray the water nowadays, you know.
The body's willing. The mind is willing. The mind is willing. That's what I'll say. Ryan Woodward wants to know, ask how he manages having all the new people that we do, and ask him why no one leaves his district unless they promote.
You know, I don't know. I hear all kinds of different stuff. I can't really tell you why they don't. 603 is one of the two districts now in Oklahoma City that actually has seven stations. And I have stations like 36s and 29s that are in very rural areas. Those are hard to fill with the young folks. Mm-hmm. Get it, man. You know, they want to do stuff. I like to rotate them around when I get a chance. Some of the problems with rotating a bunch of them at one time is, well, the main problem with rotating a bunch of them at one time is, I need the new firefighters to be exposed to and work with on a constant basis the senior firefighters. Plus sevens, you know, which is one of our busiest stations. I have two companies. Well, I need, you know, that senior driver. I need the senior members to relief drive the engine and the ladder. 16s is another one. And 16s has an engine, a ladder, and a swift water unit. It's hard to put a whole lot of new firefighters in there because of the specialties. 23s is really busy. It's a company house, so it's hard to rotate too many of them in there. If you want to make, you know, 5 rides a month or less, I can do that in 603. If you want to make 15 rides a day, I can do that in 603. Plus, like I said before, man, I usually let them do their own thing. I mean, I haven't had any trouble with them meeting the goals and objectives that are sent down from administration. But as far as their free time and what they want to do, as long as we're still providing the service to the citizens, we're still operating our apparatus, and we're still operating like we're supposed to on all types of scenes, I usually leave them alone, you know?
I love it, man. I love it.
I've heard that's good, too, you know? So some guys will go, man, you don't come out and talk to us very often. Well, what do you want me to do? Drive out there and sit at the table and look across it at you? Unless the deputy has given me information you need to know, what am I going to do, you know? Or unless you're screwing something up, or unless we're going to change something and we need to have a conversation about how it's going to act and all that stuff. Another thing is, Corley, I don't pretend to know everything. I struggled with that for a lot and still do. My strength is I've been around a long time, and it's on the incident scene. It's not planning the future of the fire department and where we're going to go. The fire chief tells me, hey, I want you to do this. I want you guys to do that. And I usually go, okay, and I'm taking notes. I go out and I tell my guys, and they go, well, what about this? And what about shit? I don't know. I have to ask. Shit, I don't know. I have to ask.
Again, I love it.
You know, I'm just a firefighter. I do what I'm told. I had no other marketable skills, right? The ability to do what I'm told, regardless of what else is happening around me. And I couldn't get in the military because when I was a kid, I had eczema. The only other option was the police force in this, and I'd make a horrible cop. I mean, I'm too nice.
No, and one thing I love about what you just said, and you ran through that whole thing, and it was great. Don't get me wrong. It was an awesome little diatribe, and I loved it. I love listening to it. But one thing I noticed about it was that you have a whether you realize it or not, you have a high amount of care of where your people are at and what they're experiencing. Like, you care what young guys are at a slow station, and you care who I don't know if you realize it or not, but that's in your message to your people.
Yeah.
That's powerful.
You know, earlier I said, well, when I first came on, I was just enjoying being a firefighter. That's kind of code for I didn't have any plans, man. I just wanted to get on the job. Then when I was on the job, I enjoyed the job. You know, I didn't have plans. Whatever we were doing that day, I was happy with. One of the questions you asked me, you know, my most important skill or trait. And I thought about that for quite a while.
Well, hold it. You got to save it because that's coming. That's coming. Oh, okay. I'm going to ask them live. You can't tell it now. That's a spoiler.
But, you know, I didn't really have any plans. And then it dawned on me, everybody's got problems. As I got older, I realized, number one, I didn't have all the answers. Things turn out different than you think they're going to. Not better.
Yeah.
And so consequently, I was really lucky being at busy stations around really aggressive firefighters and officers and lieutenants and things like that. And at the time, I didn't really realize it, man. I was just doing what we did. And then later on, I started realizing, you know, every place I worked was busy. We fought a lot of fire, you know. And I started thinking, then it kind of dawned on me the things that you have control over and how few those are. Right. So I'm a big guy on the fire ground, on the job and in life, trying to provide options. Right. Whatever those are. That question earlier about the incident command. One of my number one rules is almost at all costs, avoid tactics and strategies that end in either total success or complete failure. Avoid those if you can, like the plague, man. Work on strategies and tactics that provide options, right? If you have to make a choice on one that's going to provide you a different option. In other words, and then what? If you don't have an answer, that's one of those total success or complete failures. Stay away from that.
Avoid it. And that ties right into this question, because this one comes from down under. This one comes from Steve Kaiser in Australia. He wants to know, when something is going wrong on the fire ground, how do you do / recognize / reset to get back on track? Do you have a process?
No. When my incident action plan doesn't look like it's playing out, you know, I'm not getting the smoke slowing down, the smoke turning to white.
Right, right.
Water streams coming out of openings, whatever it is. I try to evaluate how much longer am I going to let them do that job before I change gears. And since you've already got a pretty good idea of what plan's going to be, hopefully you've saved enough resources to get those folks ready. Then what I'll do is I'll say, all right, everybody back out. We got to go defensive. And I'll get a hold of the people that I've called forward. I'll call it forward staging. You know, bring your crew up here. What I want you to do is get ready to do this. Take your stuff over there. When I give you the go sign, you do it. You guys stop doing what you're doing. Come out. You're going to report over here. You're going to get something to drink. You're going to change your air bottles. You guys begin doing plan B. When you guys are done with rehab and air bottles, you're going to go back and you're going to report to this division supervisor, this group supervisor. So I'll usually take, one of the things that happens most of the time, is I'll usually take that period of, hey, our air bottles are out, we're spent, we need a break, to reorganize, if you will, the division of labor and the command structure. That's how it usually works. I'll start to think, man, this doesn't look like it's going well. So I'll call my companies forward, tell them what plan B is, tell them where I want plan B to go, tell them what plan B is going to look like. Be ready for this trigger point.
Right.
Haven't been getting better. It's time for those initial crews to be relieved, take some relief, get all of them out there I can. Right. If I need one or two companies in there to hold it, so plan B can be put into operation, then I'll leave that. Right. But that's when I'll usually shift gears.
Where do you put yourself on the spectrum between like heavy, heavy command and control? You know, people would say micromanaging everything on the fire ground to complete laissez-faire or autonomy or cowboy. Hands off. Where do you put yourself on the spectrum?
Total delegation. I would say on the spectrum, I'm total delegation. I expect my fire officers to know what the hell to do, how the fuck to do it, what they're going to need, how to do hazard risk. If they can't, then I'll teach them. And if they still won't, then I'll find them another place to move to. You know, if they show up and they're a new officer, I'll get them some help. But as far as being the IC, their help is going to come in the form of another more experienced company officer. I'm going to call them forward. I'm going to say, look, this guy has this this assignment, this objective. He's new at it. Take your crew over there, walk him through it, right? But as far as on the fire ground, like I said earlier, sometimes I rely too heavy on my company officers. I have really good company officers, and it catches me by surprise if in the morning it hasn't dawned on me that the regular officer and the regular driver may be off. And they've got somebody loaned over there. I don't know that person, you know?
Right.
But again, That goes back to our deputy, Mike Walker, Chief Walker's directive in how to train our officers. Everybody's trained on the same foundation. So I have a pretty good idea of what they know, what they can do, even though I don't know them. They don't know me. They don't even know the guys they're working on. All of our rigs are standard. All the equipment's in the same spot. But to directly answer your question, most of the time I'm a hands-off kind of guy.
Right on. I love it. I'll give you max points on that one. Not even to the max points questions yet. You get max points on that one. Jeff Burks even said this. Another thing Chief Pascal excels at is realizing that command can't always see the entire picture. He trusts his company officers and will listen to suggestion. He doesn't let ego get in the way of a successful outcome. But that comes from giving them that authority and that autonomy to make those decisions and let them know that you do trust it.
Yes, I don't have any ego, man. I've never one day for 1 minute felt like I was the smartest guy in the room. In fact, whenever we started this curriculum or started the development of training these officers, I remember asking Chris, man, I don't have anything to teach anybody. I don't know shit. I'm just doing what I'm told, you know? And Chris told me, hey, don't sell yourself short. You've seen a lot of stuff. And I said, yeah, that won't work. Hey, that's golden, man. That's the extent of it, right?
Hey, dude, I've got like 7 pages of notes. I mean, you may not realize this. I have 7 pages of notes off your little Zoom 90 minute. I think it was 90 minutes you did on strip malls.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I have 7 pages on strip mall fires that I am turning. Yeah, dude, so do not sell yourself short, please. Which takes me, there's a lot of great questions. But I'm going to move it to book or books that you think firefighters should be reading. I don't know how much of a reader you are. I don't know if you're a massive reader or a light reader, but what books do you think firefighters should be reading? Doesn't have to be firefighting books.
Yeah. You know, I like you said, I'm not much of a book reader. All of the reading and things I do, which is quite a bit, is mostly down the internet, you know, rabbit hole. I read a lot of line of duty death reports, a lot of close calls, a lot of articles on strategy and tactics and things like that. But as far as my wife just brought me in this Broken Tools book.
Nice.
But
I hear it's good. I'll just say that.
Really good. She said it's really good. But most of the things that I read and what I would say they should read as well are articles and strategy and tactics. And if you're reading them on the internet, which most of us will be, right?
Right, right.
In each of one of those articles, when they quote the source, usually that's an active link and click on that. And that's what I mean by down the internet rabbit hole.
Yes. You know?
But that's, I read a lot of that stuff. I don't read a whole lot of leadership books, man. Fire service leadership. Come on. We're not doing brain surgery, right? Treat people like you want to be treated. In other words, take up for them. Take the heat round for them. They're going to make you. You're going to have to do it. You're going to have to take an ass chewing for every one of them one time. They'll make you do it. You do it, and from that moment forward, they'll walk barefooted on broken glass across hot asphalt in August in Oklahoma and never bat an eye, right? And again, they if they ask you about it and you tell them, yeah, I'll go and do it, that's what they're supposed to do. You're supposed to back up that decision that you made. Otherwise, you're a shitty boss. If you made captain or major or chief so you could be the first one on the calendar when the holiday rolls around, you fucked up. Your job's going to suck. You know, the more time I got, the higher in rank I got, the less I put myself in line for those days off. You know, now all my kids are grown up. Hell, I got grandkids that are old enough to buy beer, you know. When Christmas rolls around, if we ain't off, I usually don't even draw, you know. Those the guys we were talking about earlier, the new guys, they've all got brand new babies, brand new families. Let them draw for it. Cheat them out of the holiday. That's bullshit. You know, just junk like that. You don't need a leadership book for that, you know. I don't know.
I just circled it. Yeah, I circled it, put an exclamation point on it. I know what's going to lead the recording without a doubt. At 0908, I don't care what anybody says. Just when you think, yeah, Mark alone, just when you think he couldn't get in anymore, he comes up with this timestamp. Boom, timestamp right there. Timestamp. Chief, unbelievable answer. Which takes me to one of my favorite things we do, which is the five questions for firefighters. It's been going on for like 220-some episodes. We are currently in the five questions for firefighters version 3.2. The questions, there's no right or wrong answers. They are your opinions. And the points are arbitrary. They're assigned by me with the help of the audience. So are you ready for the next five questions for firefighters version 3.2?
Sure.
Okay, here we go. And I'm excited for this because you said you're a music guy. So I really am. Number one, what is the skill? Because I cut you off on this earlier. But what is the skill that has carried you through your fire service career?
You know, I thought about that quite a bit. And I think it's attitude, you know, and a lot of people would say that attitude's not necessarily a skill. And I disagree. It takes a lot of work and a lot of practice to maintain a positive attitude, right? And one of the things that my dad, who's also a retired firefighter, told me was, look, you're confusing the fire service with the fire department, right? Don't confuse those two. They're not the same thing. The fire service is to be protected, revered. Being a firefighter is to be respected. The fire department is the fire department. They have a budget. They have city council. They have whatever they got to do. Don't confuse those two. Well, I hate this job. This job sucks because the department wants this and the department and the city. Who cares a shit? You know, we've all got a boss. Try and do it as best you can. But don't screw up you being a firefighter. So you have to work on ways to view things in order to maintain that positive attitude. And again, whatever would come down the pike, man, you know, EMT, EMT defib, paramedic, hazmat, whatever, anybody interested? Yeah, sure. What the hell? You know, I'll take it, you know, and guys would go, man, you know, if you learn how to work that defibrillator, that automated defibrillator, you'll get loaned all the time. Well, only three of us learned how to work it at once. One of us was a driver. You know what they did? That put all three of us, me, on squad one, basically every freaking day. Yeah, that sucked. Man, I tell you what, that hurt me, you know? So, the, you know, the positive attitude, it's not what happens, it's how you view what happens. You know, and sometimes it takes a lot of work to figure out how to view it to where you just don't go, man, this sucks. It's bullshit. You know, you have to go, wait a minute. Why does it suck? What
right.
really do I have to do? What really can I do? And they don't really tell you a lot of times how to do something. They just give you an objective. And you can think about it from a positive standpoint and come up with, if you will, a funner way to actually accomplish the objective that they wanted you to do, you know. I would say it's maintaining that positive attitude, man.
Attitude. I don't know if anybody's ever had attitude as an answer before, but I absolutely love the answer. And me and the audience absolutely said max points over and over and over, and I love the answer. Which mm-hmm. takes us to question number two. It's job town. It's time. You're in route and responding. You got to think of the scene from Backdraft where he's putting that cassette tape into the deck. The song that is playing. What song are you playing in route?
Well, I turned the radio on in the Chief's car because when I rode around with my grandpa, it was quiet. And I don't want to be old. I can't help it, but I am when I see pictures of myself. In fact, here I'm looking at you because if I look at me, I think, good God, I look like an old man. And at the time in Backdraft, that was awesome music. It still is. On the other hand, I'm a fringe kind of guy.
Okay.
I have all different kinds of music for all different states of mind. In the morning on the way to work, when I really need the motivation, I find myself listening to a lot of, you know, sludge metal. I think I put the Electric Wizard Band, and their song was Funeralopolis. You know, it's a real heavy grunge type metal, which is just one of many.
Okay.
And then I picked one for Incident Command. Like I said before, Incident Command, I need to slow down a lot. So that heavy the Melvins or something like that, you know. another one I picked up for in the morning or when I have to deal with something and I really need to get spun up is a band called Music Hates You. And the name of the song is Send More Paramedics.
Send More Paramedics.
Man, it's just real fast. You know, there's some bands like 9 Pound Hammer, anything from their Kentucky Breakdown.
I feel like I opened a can that can't be closed here. Like, this is Pandora's box of metal.
Oh, yeah. I really like it.
Okay. So, for the question, you get to pick one. Which one are you playing en route to that job?
I'm going to say Send More Paramedics.
Send More Paramedics. Love the variety. Dan Benner said, love this. I just learned a new genre. Funeralopolis, max points 100. Let's go, Chief. You're one of the older guys. I cannot wait. I want to hear. Yes, absolutely. There we go. Love the answers. Love the answers. Number three. You've got max points one and two, by the way. Number three. What is your favorite fire service tradition? And we had to put a caveat on this and say you can't say firehouse kitchen table because that was like so many people's answer. So besides the firehouse kitchen table, what's your favorite tradition?
You know, I thought about that one a lot, too. And it's just the stuff that we do at the fire station. Now, then, I think the stuff that gives me the most goosebumps is the memorial services, basically the history, the honor of the fire service.
I love it.
I go to the memorial service a lot of times. I'll go to all of them I can. But like anybody else, man, I've been around a long time and my death bucket's kind of overflowing. Sometimes I have to back away.
Sure.
Protect myself. But I, you know, I hate to say it like this, but the pomp and circumstance, you know, the class A, everybody hates it. And I always feel like a dork putting it on. But when you get it on, man, it's the freaking class. I mean, that stupid looking hat, but all that brass and stripes and stuff, it's just cool. I mean,
yeah, it is.
Mexican general, but still, you know.
Yes.
Taking care of the rigs, you know, seeing the rigs lined up in the rig room at night when you turn the rig room lights off and you've got just the can lights in front of the overhead doors and they're all lined up across there. That freaking is awesome.
Yeah.
I'm weird.
I don't care what anybody says. That is max points all day long, dude. You may have just thrown a dart and hit my heart because 100%, man, that is what I love about the fire service, man.
No.
That stupid looking hat, man. Like you said, Mexican general, that is, I love it. I absolutely love it, man.
I don't hunt. I don't fish. I don't, you know, that's another problem at the end of my career. What the hell am I going to do when I retire? I mean, this is what I do. This is all I've ever wanted to do. And I like it. It's okay to like it.
It's okay to like it. I love it. I'm trying to keep track. Number four, this one is on the clock. We had to put it on the clock because the sheer amount, we had to put it on the clock because it's not a fair question. You get 1 minute to pick your four people you would put on your Mount Rushmore of the fire service.
Yeah.
Right. No honorable mentions. You get four, you get 1 minute and go.
Well, my Mount Rushmore of the fire service, a national guy would be again, Bobby Holton. Because that's the first guy I remember that started assembling things on the internet where you could go look at reputable information. And then for me personally, my dad, the retired firefighter, he taught me how to make decisions really quick under pressure. You know, well, what would you do this? Why don't you do that? What's that going to look like? What can you do? You know, it's not what you want to do. It's what can you do? Start doing what you can do. Start that right fucking now and ask for what you need to do what you need to do. Guy named Jimmy Menifee, he used to drive squad one when I was a new boy on it. He taught me how much fire you can freaking put out with a hand line. You know, a guy named John Mode, he was a station officer, he was a retired battalion chief for Oklahoma City. But when he was the station officer, he started showing me that you could do things on the fire ground that they would tell you in school you couldn't do. You know, if you spray water in there, kill everybody. Mode said, bullshit, we're right here. Spray water, hit it right up there, and you'll take all the heat out of it. Do it. You know, my dad was the same way. You know, you're dragging the hose if it's hot, spray water. Because when I came on, man, you didn't spray water till you saw fire. Dad said, if it's hot, spray water, you're dragging the fucking hose anyway. Turns out he was right.
Love it. And this was way before the UL. He was telling you how to hit that exterior extreme way before the UL studies.
And he figured it out the same way most of us figure it out. And when I tried it for myself, probably the same way most firefighters do. It's about the seventh fire we'd made that day. It's late at night. I was the newest guy, so I'm doing all the labor and I'm fucking tired. And the fire's in the living room. I got to go down the driveway, into the backyard, into the back door, because you always have to attack from the unburnt side. And as I'm dragging that hose down the driveway, they charge it. And I was right there by that window, and I looked around. I said, wow, fuck it, man. I sprayed the water. No, normally happens, you drag it back there, get it all worked out in the dog shit in the backyard, force the door open, try to make it to the front living room. They'd call you out. You'd run back around front with that line, hit it, knock down the fire, then drag the bitch back around again. And I thought, man, I'm going to save me a couple of drags, you know. Work like charm.
I love it. Sam, absolutely wonderful work. Absolutely wonderful answer. Max points on number four. Final question. It is the question that has been around forever. It is heavy fire, searchable space. Would you rather be assigned to the nozzle or first in on VES?
I didn't have any trouble with that. If you want to save people and property, you put the fucking fire out. The nozzle.
There you go. That makes it officially 5 for 5, max points. And that officially makes it 240 scraps in the books. I don't even know how many timestamps are in this episode, but they are amazing, and I cannot say thank you enough for them. Chief Mike Pascal, thank you for being with us on this evening. If someone wants to get a hold of you, if someone wants to reach out and ask you a question, what's the best way to do so?
Well, I have a Facebook page, but I kind of stay off of social media for all the snipes and stuff, man. Screw them. If you wouldn't take advice from them, don't even read what they got to say. Fuck them. Because it just makes you mad and you want to argue with them. But probably email, Mike Pascal, one big long word, at AOL.com.
Just shoot, I love it.
I don't know. I'll send something back. Maybe.
Maybe. I love it. No, I absolutely love it.
I don't sell or write. The only thing I would tell you is get involved in that rescue survey, because an organization that only tracks their losses, you got to be shitting me. Come on, man.
No, you're 100% correct, brother. We're counting our wins. Finally counting our wins, man. It's making a difference. Here we go. The housekeeping. Go to firehousevigilance.com. The vigilantes, become a part. Go join. $5 a month. You can sign up for a year. Of course, we have the after party after the scrap. Mike has agreed to come and be roasted by the vigilantes. He said, bring it on, even though you never roast anyone. We show up and bust the chops. The new book is out. It was mentioned. The new book is out. I have a copy. Let's see. I'm reaching. The new book is out. Broken Tools. It is the book from me and the missus. Broken Tools. It relationships. Go get it. Go grab a copy. It'll help your relationship. It's the stuff I wish I knew. Yeah, there you go. It's the stuff I wish I knew when I was young and married. It's the stuff that took a long time to learn. The stuff I still work on. I'll be honest with you. Coming up on the scrap next week, it is Mike Greco. The week after that, we have FDIC in there. And then the week after FDIC, Ian Bennett, then Dan Shaw, and then Scott Thompson. Man, I'm telling you, the next four loaded up. 2024 is continuing with the badass lineup. You will not want to miss these episodes. Keep it rolling in style. Speaking of 2024, next week in Indianapolis, please, 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 if you're going to be at FDIC, come to my class. I don't want it to be empty. Please come to my class. Please come and say hi. Please cheer. Please throw up some rocker horns. Whatever you got to do, just be there. It's Thursday at 10:30 a.m. on the 18th if you're going to be at FDIC. And then on that evening, after the Fool's Bash, it's Wednesday night, I believe. We're having the vigilante meetup. So if you're going to be there, and you don't have to be a vigilante to show up and then meet the vigilantes and figure out what you're missing out on. But it's for everybody. Just, there's going to be a lot of vigilantes doing vigilante things, and you're not going to know what's going on because there's a whole lot of inside jokes, including Neverly. Neverly has to be mentioned. So finally, Scrap After Party, Sam's going to post the link. Mike's going to be there. Yes, yes, yes. Audience, 100%. Thank you for being here each and every week. Thank you for investing in the fire service. Thank you for investing in yourself. Thank you for being passionate. And thank you most of all for asking great questions of some phenomenal guests. You are the ones that make the scrap magical. Chief Mike Pascal, thank you for sharing your evening with us.
You're welcome. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Weekly Scrap. Please subscribe and please share. We'll see you at the next episode.